and encapsulating all of that is the truth. The truth sets you free. And somebody who's been seeking truth for a long time, Dr. Nick Begich is on. He's joining us today. We're very happy to have him. His accomplishments are as long as my arm. I could go over them. Of course, he wrote the book about harp. These angels don't play harp, so to speak. Whatever that turns into, I'm sure we'll get to that. Mind control, 5G, we'll get into where we're at. This guy was able to see the future 20 years ago and to predict it and to warn us. Unfortunately, maybe we didn't heed some of those warnings, but now it's coming into view. What is, where are we? Where are we going? All of these things with Dr. Nick Begich. Welcome to the show, Doc.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's been a long time since I was on this this program and with your previous host. And, you know, technology, I've been doing this a long time, you know, on the predictive models were really based on what was in the public literature. You know, and people who know my work know it's all extremely heavily footnoted. In fact, the technology trends we're talking about today, I had like 1,000 footnotes in the two books that, that dealt with them back now almost 20 years ago. And as I look at, you know, where are we? We're right where I thought we would be, you know, in terms of how privacy works, how public policy is set and manipulated, and how the public is really manipulated in a way that has become very sophisticated when you think about the whole mind effects, mind control, and some of the easy ways that are applied generally to our population. And the trends in technology, which led to really a more directed, a more controlled, a more restricted society at the same time people were thinking it was taking us the other direction. And I think we are at a threshold in terms of evaluating value systems against where the technology has taken us, because it advanced kind of faster than we've had a chance, I think, for most people to even digest, you know, the impact of it. And now we're living through it 20 years, you know, 20 years later and well into it.
I've been fascinated at this, and I've heard some of your recent interviews, older ones. I've been a fan for a long time, and you've touched on this too. It seems like this idea is rising, and the idea I mean is that, you know, the Bible says one thing about God, and that has a certain meaning and has a certain connotation to people, some negative, some obviously positive. But science is now starting to look at the Bible and talk about our collective consciousness, our divinity for, you know, I don't, lack of a better word, this idea that we have, what we have in us, and it's now becoming common knowledge and common speak in somebody that's not a pastor. You know, you're not a pastor, right, but yet you're, you talk about these things. Why don't you address that for a moment?
Right. You know, in terms of science finally reaching a point where it can interpret what we used to call miraculous on certain levels. But I think the creation works by an order, by a set of rules, if you will. And, you know, and I think about humans in this way, and I think the physics bears more and more of it out. But think of the creation story. You know, we're created in the image and likeness of God, which is something I do speak about in my lectures because I believe that. But it's not about our physical form, obviously, you know. I mean, because some of us look pretty bad. I mean, some of us look pretty good, but it's not about that. It's really about, you know, what we really represent in the world, you know, how we project in the world, literally. And we project through our physical form. But I believe that underneath that is this this aspect of our essence. And I, you know, people talk about evolution. Everybody reacts to that word pretty differently. But I would say it's more about remembering what we are. And when I study the mind control of, issues, you know, across, you know, a lot of documents between, you know, CIA records, university records, what scientists are doing in that field, what I discovered was a couple of things. Firstly, the military refers to a certain set of attributes they call anomalous human potentials. Others used to refer to them in terms of extrasensory perceptions of ESP, but that got kind of a slanted connotation about what all that meant because of the nature of the research back in the 60s and 70s when a lot of it was done, you know, pretty ad hoc and by a lot of radical thinkers, and that's what it took to, you know, kind of go there. But it also is, when you think about, in terms of biblical terms, the gifts of the Spirit, what those represent in terms of what's possible when a person connects with the creation, the Creator, however you want to name that. And, you know, in most religions, you really don't, because you can't, because words don't express what the creation is. But here's a couple of points from physics, you know, that have been observed and understood and are generally accepted. The idea that an observer, you and me, decide whether something is a particle or matter or a wave, energy. You know, I mean, in other words, we really do, on a fundamental level, co-create the world around us. And I think that's what's meant and implied by in the image and likeness. The other thing I'd say about the process is, when you think about this, if you believe that, if you really truly believe that, and I know many listeners to this network will say so, then when you look at another person, you have to change your perspective, and you recognize that you're looking in the eyes of divinity when you look in the eyes of another human being. And this is the fact of the matter in terms of how we were created. And you can debate, or you can decide to be the judge and render judgment about that person's path, but I don't think that's really such a good idea. Because I think that's reserved to a higher power that interprets the path we follow to find our relationship back with what we are in our essence. And to me, both in terms of someone who studied science for most of my life and been a commentator on it for now 25 years, that science really bears it out. And the other thing I think that happens is this sort of self-depreciating kind of view of what we are, you know, because people, we all tend to be, you know, highly critical of ourselves, if you think about it. I mean, if you're really evaluating your performance in the world, you can't help it, right? I mean, that's a normal thing. But in doing so, the harshness in which we judge ourselves and others ought to be reconsidered in the same light of our own divinity. And I think that's important, is we need to recognize the need to change. We need to recognize our need to remember more about what we should be doing and how we should be behaving. And I think the whole notion of sort of falling into flesh, you know, that whole thought in terms of how it processes for me, is failing to recognize the difference between your physical form and what it requires and your awareness and what it knows. And so that's, I think, the fallen state of man that leads to the mess we see in the world today. You know, because it's really pretty insane.
Yeah, it is, absolutely. Let me interject and go back just a hair.
Yeah.
This is fascinating, and your books are just fascinating on this subject. Earth Pulse is your website, earthpulse.com.
Right.
You talked about the CIA, anomalous human potentials.
Right.
What did the CIA think about the divinity of man, or what did they discover about consciousness, about our creation, about our participation in the world around us? And those, what do they know that they're kind of keeping from us that they don't want us to know?
The most important thing is what they don't actually say so overtly, and that is, but if you read it all, you get it. And it's that every one of us have these latent potentials, you know, these possibilities with us. And these are the things that they talk about, healing, you know, hands-on healing, that as an attribute that men and women have. The idea of knowing what another is thinking, or remote viewing as another abstract of that, being able to see something at a distance without physically being there. You know, a lot of these things now have been quantified scientifically. There's a couple people I'd point to. I'd point to the work of Alexander K. Varanen, who ran the biophysics lab of the USSR when there was a USSR. For the last 10 years, there was one. And his main area was to study the anomalous, the extrasensory perceptions and possibilities for humans, and reduce them to mathematics. And I knew Alex, and I know, you know, up until his passing, but I had him involved in some things I was doing with the Lay Institute one time in a conference on mind effects. And then, you know, others who have done work in remote viewing, there's a recent book by Elizabeth Rauscher and others on sort of what they found there. And Elizabeth is a triple PhD in astrophysics, biophysics, and geophysics. She she's in her late 70s now, although she won't tell me. But I'm just figuring the math, you know. But she was doing work at UCLA in the 60s in consciousness studies. Before that, at 15, she had done her first work in nuclear physics, which was classified. She did summers in high school at Lawrence Livermore Labs. But, you know, she's done some really remarkable work that quantifies this. On the investigative side, on sort of the darker side, Captain Tyler, who later became a colonel, retired, but he had been mentioned in a book called Low Intensity Conflict and Modern Technology, where they were looking at these anomalous capabilities. And the CIA's involvement in this goes back to the Mankind Research Institute starting in the 60s. And a bunch of really, what they did is the mainstream academics, really maverick thinkers, didn't fit in very well, you know, because they were really bucking the status quo. But they were funded through various nonprofits, other organizations. CIA runs a venture capital fund in Silicon Valley today, you know, that they do the same thing. They underwrite the technologies, and then they utilize those technologies for a variety of purposes, maybe quite different than the original thought behind them. And so that continues. Only now it's when you start to think about it. The other thing they figured out is to control this anomalous human capabilities, to control people's ability to get there. It was very simple. All you had to do is keep people in a state of anxiety, agitation, and fear. And look around.
Ooh, let's hold that right there. Let's hold that thought right there. I think that's a perfect leaping off point for the next segment. Short segment coming up and then another long segment. Nick Begich, earthpulse.com is the website. Just so glad to have him on. Thepowerhour.com. Stay tuned. You said something extremely profound before the break. You talked about the CIA researching, government scientists researching the potential, the latent potential, the anomalous human potentials, and realizing that they could control them very easily. So why don't we continue right from there?
Right. And this was the important point is, first of all, everybody has the capability. That's number one. Everyone, no matter what. And then this is like our
capability to do what?
Well,
capability to do what?
To be recognized and recognize what we are as created beings and then start to manifest the gifts of the spirit by recognizing the pathway to it. And it's our own individual pathway. I will say that very loudly. In fact, those from a Christian background, take a look at King Solomon's journey. You know, here's a guy that went through all of the occults, all of the craziness of his day to end up the wisest man in the world. But, you know, a lot of people would have burned him at the stake along his path, you know, and the question is, who's to judge? I think leave that to God to judge our individual paths, and we need to be a little less harsh on ourselves. What the CIA discovered and others discovered was we have these capabilities. If we can escape our flesh and find our essence again. And this is what they discovered. Okay, so I'm kind of blending ideas here between the religious and the scientific. In fact, some of the best conferences I went to were a series called Religion, Science, and the Environment, right? Well, there's a weird combo from most people's perspective.
Yeah.
But it involves some of the best thinkers across religious circles and political, environmental, economic, big players, you know, winners of Nobel Prizes in all areas. I mean, a bunch of people. And this was the interesting thing about all of it is it comes back to this, you know, that these base ideas formed in value systems, religions, if you will, kind of got separated from science as if they could exist apart, and they really can't. I mean, one drives the other in so many ways. And so that kind of re-coming together is part of what I'm talking about. But the CIA's recognition of how to stop it, and it was through fear or creating anxiety. And you think about how, I mean, even watching the news, if you will, generates that. Watching commercials that tell you all the things you ought to be worried about, whether it's your medication or your deodorant, you know. And so when you create that situation, what happens is your brain cannot reach higher states of awareness that can be measured with EEGs and other means to see when you're in those states where the creative things can happen, where the stuff that your birthright says should happen can happen. I mean, the first thing an angel ever said in any of the scriptures was, fear not, right? I mean, the first message is don't be afraid because everything shuts down. And that's the fact of the matter. It does physiologically in the biophysics of how we operate. That's what happens. So these higher states of awareness are tied to emotions that emulate, in fact, God. In my perspective, love, as an example, religion describes as God, the manifestation of God in the earth. And so when you think about it, not as a metaphor, but as a source of something, when do you accomplish the greatest things in your life? It's in those moments. When your creative forces come together, it's surrounded by the positive empathy, compassion, the positive emotions. And you can actually measure that in brain activity. And that is fundamental to who we are. And the fear syndrome that we're locked in and the anxiety syndromes that we're locked in have everything to do with falling into fear and falling into flesh and having the perception somehow that this little flash that we experience called life on the scope of eternity is as deep as the credit we give it on one level. And on the other level, it is important to recognize what we are within our physical form and then manifest it differently. And when that begins to happen, then you'll see a different world. But what has happened conversely is the technologies that learned about what we are now exploit what we are in ways that do us damage, that affect our privacy, that affect our psyche, that affect our very culture and the way it's formed. And hopefully we'll have time to talk about that.
Well, I hope so. I think that's, we only got about 45 seconds before the break. But, you know, they're turning off our capabilities or keep us in fear so that we don't allow ourselves to express them. The other side of that is then not only are they suppressing it, then because they're suppressing it and because they're keeping us in a box, then they are actually using our creative power against us to now manifest this fear and this discontent.
Right.
Would that be accurate?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, you can even take it to the next level, which is by understanding how the brain works, you can create certain oscillations in every electronic medium, from internet to television to radio, and create a super sensitivity to the programming you're receiving.
Welcome back to the Power Hour. It's just such a pleasure to talk to somebody of Dr. Begich's just caliber. He just drips intelligence and thought and just inspires you talking to him. I'd like to make everybody aware, of course, Dr. See, he's got me tongue-tied. You got me verklempt over here, Dr. Begich. Robert Redfern is going to come on the second hour, and all his products are now on sale over at the Power Mall. You call Jay, 877-817-9829, 877-817-9829. This is how we're funded. So we appreciate your purchases, your donations, your thoughts, your prayers, everything. Thank you so much, Dr. Group's products are also on sale. And REM Sleep, time to stock up on REM Sleep over at the Power Mall, 877-817-9829. Dr. Begich's website is earthpulse.com if you want to check that out. Of course, the book Earth Rising, The Revolution and Earth Rising 2 really talk about the predictive nature of his work if you want to go back and check that out. We're talking about television.
Right.
And, you know, nowadays, especially with this HD, you know, I'm afraid to let my children in front of the TV too long, they turn into like zombies or something.
Well, and look at it, not just there, but look at all of the electromagnetic carriers, whether it's the rollout of 5G, 4G, television, internet. Here's what can be done and is done, is you can modulate the signal in a way that creates an entrainment effect, what's called a FFR, a frequency following effect, where the brain will begin to mirror, in the case of a visual image, the light flicker rate, which puts you in to, if it's done correctly, put you into a very light trance-like state. And think about people watching TV when you're hollering at them to come and eat dinner and they're totally, literally zoned out. It's because they are in an altered state and they're watching, usually when they come home from work, the news. the programming of the day. And they don't even hide it, right? They even call it programming. You just think about it in a different context. But it really is. And yeah. Advertisers know this. They apply it. Gaming that kids are addicted to today, something we talked about now decades ago, is based on three-dimensional modeling of the brain in real time. So the kid is playing the game, and they're seeing what it does to the brain, instead of just getting like a written survey afterwards, how did you like it, you know? And in this case, what they're looking for is, does it affect the areas of the brain that are associated with addictive behaviors or sex drive or the release of certain chemicals in the brain that make you come back for more? And that's how they're designed and why they are so addictive and why almost immediately from release, some of them make gazillions of dollars because of the way in which they operate. When you think of social media and something we talked about, again, decades ago, what would eventually happen and has happened is from social media, internet searches, just the data that's out there about a person. In fact, this ties back to Brexit and Trump's elections. What was done was an intellectual from Poland had an idea. They took him over to Cambridge and set up a lab around it, and he created a company. And that company did the analytical work to look at people's profiles. And with 300 data points, this is like 300 searches on the internet, 300 data points, you know what somebody is about as if you had lived with them for 5 years. If you get 3,000 data points, you know as much about them as if you'd lived with them for 20 years, and you're better at predicting what they will do than they are, you know, than the average citizen. So they applied this in these elections, and for instance, were able to set up, I think it was 36 profile types that then specific advertising was sent in to move a population a specific way, either for a candidate or against a candidate. And I'll give you an example. There was one ad that ran targeting black voters in the South that ran from the Trump campaign against, or one of his supporters, against Hillary. And the way it did it is it took that voice clip of her talking about inner city youths at one point saying, we have to bring them to heel, we have to bring them to heel. And in that voice of hers, the image they shot was policemen with police dogs attacking black men on the ground, you know, and a series of those with those words. And that was sent in to voters that were likely Hillary voters that instead of, they didn't vote for Trump, but what they did do is they didn't go to the polls and vote for anybody. So, you know, when you think about how to use data, this is one of the ways in which we predicted it would be used. And in fact, it is being used.
You just scared the absolute heck out of me. Yeah, I don't want to be in fear. I mean, we've talked about that earlier, but this election coming up with Facebook, with YouTube, you're telling me that this isn't just about privacy, whatever. They're going to totally throw the election. That's what you just told me.
Yeah, that's what's happening. Here's another example. Now, these big companies that are behaving like monopolies of data information and your personal privacy, because no longer is it about what's in your house that determines who you are and what your privacy levels are and all of your information. It's what's on the World Wide Web and everything connected to it, which if you have the code is everything, right? Now, that's your digital doorway. And I don't believe that we should be asked to sign something to say, okay, we agree to this or that or the other thing. No, I don't think the question in a truly free society in the 21st century to emulate our founding fathers and our sense of liberty, they should not be able to ask you as a human being to give up anything about your basic right to be, which includes your privacy as we interpret what a human being is relative to government. And it is an upside-down equation right now. And the models being followed are the social scoring model being developed in China, where you did your social score, those data points that the Googles and the Facebooks are setting up, so they can be in China, but they have to give the government access to all that. And they can be in India, where other things are happening with monetary policy and the tracking and digitizing of currency. And these are markets that have over 2.5 billion people, many of whom are headed into the middle class, that market interests are interested in exploiting, but they got to follow their rules. Well, in following their rules, they develop software that instead of applying to communist China and India, they can apply in commercial ways to the United States to manipulate populations for political and other purposes. And that is exactly what is going on right now in these midterms. when you think about the shutdown of free speech with InfoWars and some of the other things happening, the shadow banning and the rest of it, yep, it's about manipulation. It's not about some allegation towards Russians. It's the reality of these mega corporations capitalized at over $1 trillion, running way too much of the world's public opinion.
Many people call them the elite. I don't like to use that word. I like to use the word the syndicate. The syndicate, the global syndicate, they obviously have to be aware of all these things and tapped into somebody like yourself, smart like yourself. What are they thinking right now? What is scaring them? What is shaking them? What is motivating them?
Oh, it's populism. I mean, I read their journals, right? I mean, because it's important to know. No, and this is what has happened is so many people don't read the other side's views, so you can't ever have an argument about it because you don't have the information. Secondly, when something happens, your reaction to it is more extreme because you never even knew the other side existed, how information is so tailored for us now. But I read the Foreign Affairs Journal, which is, it's like the insider track. It was formed by, people like Kissinger and Brzezinski and others. And I read Technology Review, which is MIT's technology trends, and their opinions about them. And they're quite interesting. Not that I agree with a lot of what I read, but it's interesting to know. And populism is a big fear, and the disintegration of what they call the liberal order, which is really about a very different system. I'll give you a good example. People talk about the European Parliament all the time, right? You hear about it all the time. But what most people don't realize is not one single member is elected. None of them are. They're appointed. They're not even representative government. They're representative of representative government, which is really weird. And they're regulating what goes on in all of Western Europe to a great degree and controlling their currency through the central bank. The similar thing that they did with the Fed here, kind of get it out of government hands so now the bankers can regulate a lot more. But when you think about it, what makes government strong? And I said this a long time ago when I was in my teens, it's transportation, information, and communication systems. That was before all of this evolved. And it was clear to me then at 16 and 17, over 40 years ago, that this was where we were headed, that these were the things that were going to dictate what made a government strong. And therefore, think about it, technology. How many scientists do we have in our Congress? It's a joke. It's lawyers and other people with other backgrounds. But, boy, science is what decides what's powerful in a country. And average people need to have a greater understanding and more control over our governments in terms of how they use their power.
Well, that's just what we need as lawyers. Yeah, everybody needs more lawyers, right? That's what you hear everywhere, right? We need more lawyers.
here's the problem there, too. Think about it as a fundamental right again as we think about our culture and how it's developed. The law, you used to be able to manage on your own. Two books fit under your arm. Now it's three stories of a library.
Great point. Complicate the issue. Diffuse us from the simplicity of our beginning. Dr. Nick Begich. His father was in Congress. His brother is, too, I believe, in state. There's another brother in state Congress there in Alaska. We'll get into that next time. We won't wait 3 years to have you on next time, Dr. Begich.
Sounds good. It has been a while, and it goes quicker than you think, but I appreciate you guys having me on. And more importantly, I appreciate the subject matter we've covered today because I think it's about us, ultimately. It's about people. And what we decide to do that changes the world.
Absolutely. Let me ask you this. We spend a lot of time on the show talking about the foundation of our country. I feel personally, and many people, that we've been ripped away from our foundation. That's one of the ways they've manipulated us because we're away from our moorings. The Declaration of Independence, to me, is the revolutionary political document we've ever seen. More revolutionary than even the Old Testament, at least in that part.
Right.
That idea that we are endowed by our Creator, we're next to our Creator, government is below. How important is that idea, and what do you see? I see that as the whole war that we're talking about.
It really is. It's recognition, again, of fundamentally what we are, which is what so many organizations want to change this into something else. Taxpayers, consumers, you know, whatever the label is that draws short of what we actually are. And I think that's it. You know, when you start to think about it in those terms, and modern society is largely shaped by media, which is largely shaped by the will of individuals. And again, how do you look at that? You know, and the biggest fear of those that have something to hide is being able to maintain the hidden nature of their lives. The internet opened the door on a lot of this, but at the same time, opened a digital doorway to us, to our personal privacy and fundamental liberty. And when you think about government, you know, the cameras are turned the wrong direction. Government should be where the cameras are. We should be able to dial into our kids' classroom as parents and see how the teacher's doing, see how Johnny's doing too, so we know what we might have to do when they get home. You know, but the point is, the cameras all turn towards us. We require transparency in government. I mean, what does a congressman have to hide, for instance? You know, maybe those questions ought to be asked instead of the other way around. You know, maybe the camera needs to be there in their office, where you can dial in and see the conversations that are going on in your interest with your employees, for goodness sake. You know, what a difference that would make.
I tell the story, yeah, absolutely. I tell a story about my dog, and I told it to you during the break. I went to the vet. The dog had an ear infection. The doctor said, give him the dog these pills. It'll be loopy when it can't walk and it's kind of out of it. Then you can do your procedure on the dog. I said, okay. We waited the time. The dog was out of it. Could not put one foot in front of the other. I leaned on the dog. My wife got the ear back, everything. The dog was out of it. As soon as she put the medicine in the dog's ear, the dog flipped up like some pterodactyl, scratched me, and goes running around the house like a greyhound. I think the syndicate has overestimated their position, and no algorithm can prepare, just like me, for that moment.
Right, and this is it. And I was talking about it during the break, this idea that you know, sooner or later, human beings fall into what we are, and usually it's when it's necessary. You know, that's when our capabilities pop out, so to speak. And a spontaneous revolution, like what we saw in Eastern Europe in the in the late 80s and into the 90s, and you know, where there's no head, no tail, you can't chop it off. It just happens because people come to some awakening, some awareness. And I've been saying it for two decades. We're arriving there, you know, and the elite or whoever they are. Syndicate is an interesting word. You know, 100 years ago, that's the word that was used for the elite. Go back during the Guggenheims and Morgan Trusts and all of that. Same conversation, just a different layer of technology. You know, then it was the Industrial Revolution. Now it's the Communication and Information Revolution. The same kind of gangsters appear. You know, it's like more or less syndicate. And what is it that they fear is transparency the most. And, you know, and I said during the break, you know, Judgment Day, when the book of knowledge is opened and there's a big gnashing of teeth as everybody's got to reconcile their lives, perhaps that's the spontaneous point in which you actually see into the mind of another and know their thoughts intimately, which is going to require several things. One is forgiveness, a willingness to be forgiven and forgive ourselves, and a recognition of how weak we truly are and yet how unique we are as created beings. And I think that's the day that the syndicate, the elites of the world fear, because, you know, everyone knows their true story. I had this discussion with a rabbi, actually. It's an interesting one. It was supposed to be an hour conversation because he happened to be at my friend's place. We were in this pretty deep discussion, and what I noticed is he was really self-depreciating and running himself down, and I finally said, you know, Rabbi, you believe that you're creating a likeness and image of God? And he said, of course I believe that. I said, then why are you creating the greatest blasphemy of all and sitting there for an hour condemning yourself, you know, in a way that is not constructive, but is actually destructive to what you are? I mean, God made you perfect, and here you are hacking yourself up, and we all do this. Be a little more merciful.
The greatest blasphemy of all.
You know.
The greatest blasphemy of all. Wow. And that,
it is.
You know, and if we let these gangsters take that from us, because basically that's what the Declaration of Independence did, is it guaranteed that position.
Yes.
The Constitution, Bill of Rights then protects that position. If we let these gangsters take this away from us, then shame on us.
Yeah, if they divide us to that extent. I mean, remember religious freedom, too. And I don't say it's about tolerance, because I hate that word, because it means that you have to hold back your truth, shut up, and be politically correct. I don't believe in that. I believe in acceptance. Acceptance of the divinity of every living human being came to some place, and to be a little less harsh on ourselves and them. And let God sort that out. That's what our Constitution also says, basically. You know, yeah, we're in a higher position, but let's act like it. Let's recognize the divinity in each other and be respectful enough to have a very different, very diverse, and very charged conversations. But let's do it in the spirit of what we are, not in this illusion that keeps us so divided that we
fail. Illusion. Well, you said the word illusion. Illusion. To me, the only, we got about a minute left, Dr. Bates. To me, the only thing we can get unified, that America can really get unified, is the founding documents, the Bill of Rights. Everybody can agree to the Bill of Rights. If you can't agree to the Bill of Rights, well, I mean, heck with you.
You're in the wrong place.
There's no help for you. Yeah, you're in the wrong place. Exactly.
Yeah, you're in the wrong neighborhood. And you know, the idea of imposition, which is maybe a subject for another day. You know, we were not set up to impose our will on other countries, and we find ourselves doing it. That's why populism is not just rising in the United States. It's rising in every place where sovereignty matters, and it starts with sovereignty of the individual soul, something our government recognized in its founding, and we have forgotten over the last 200 years, and we need to remember who we are, what we
last
are,
question.
And this nation belongs to us.
Last question. You talked about spontaneous revolution. You talked about information getting to people. It's almost like everybody's starting to realize now, will people turn the switch and this thoughts, these beliefs, turn into real action? Will we win this?
I believe we will. And it's a matter of finding the pathway through it and being a little less harsh on ourselves and others. Find the love in it, for
awesome.
God's sake. That's what God is.
Dr. Begich, EarthPulse.com.